Morning. Sorry for the delay. Our chair is not here, so as vice chair, I'll go ahead and assume running the meeting. So welcome this morning to the Emergency Medical Care Committee meeting, and we'll start with introductions. And Ron, can you start with us?
Hi, I'm Ron Blau, representing the 1st District.
Nick Annis, representing 3rd District.
Ken Miller, Orange County EMS, Assistant Medical Director.
Sam Stratton, Orange County EMS Medical Director.
Wolfgang Kanabe, Orange County Fire Chiefs Association.
John Gilway, 4th Supervisorial District.
Ken McFarland, representing the Hospital Association of Southern California.
Sharon Hoyer, representing Orange Coast Emergency Nurses Association.
Patrick Powers, representing 2nd District.
Great, welcome. And first order of business is the approval of the minutes for the August 22nd meeting. We're not going to approve the September meeting because we did not have a quorum, so that would be for information only. So if I could have a motion for the August minute approval.
I assume you registered an abstention for those that were not in attendance?
Correct.
So move.
Second? Nobody here for the second? Second? Okay. First and second. Any comments? All right. Those are approved. We will now go into the medical director update. Dr. Stratton?
Yeah. First, I would like to ask Julie Puentes to meet me somewhere between here and where she's sitting over there.
To Julie a meritorious service award along the gate. Julie has announced that she's retiring. I know. Retiring, but still working. Is that how you put it? Yes. So I know that because we still have meetings. And in honor of all the work that you've done, which has been extensive for the county with regard to representing the hospitals through a number of really difficult times, overcrowding the ERs and other things, and the current work that you're doing now with regard to the psychiatric emergency services overcrowding. EMS would like to give this award for hanging on the wall. You should be surprised. The other announcement as I walk to my seat is I'd like to recognize Dr. Ken Miller, who's up here with us. Ken was awarded the California EMS Authority Medical Director of the Year Award. It's now been 2 weeks ago, and this award's given once a year to a medical director in California who's made major contributions to the system. Ken serves on national committees, on state committees, and numerous local committees, as well as taking on projects that sometimes are quite a challenge, wouldn't we say that? I ask all of you to join me in recognizing Ken for his being awarded this the Medical Director of the Year Award from the EMS Authority. And I guess we should give you a round of applause. So I'm going to start.
Thank you.
With that, then, other parts of the EMS Medical Director report. I'm sure many of you are aware of initiatives throughout the United States to begin to deploy, if you will, or supply naloxone or Narcan to first responders, in particular law enforcement personnel, so that if they come upon someone who is suspected of having a narcotic overdose, they can treat that individual immediately and potentially reverse the effects of the narcotics and potentially save a life. I would like to advise the EMCC committee that we have moved into relatively advanced discussions with the Orange County Sheriff's Department, and most recently with the Santa Ana Police Department, to begin to develop a pilot, which would be is possible under state regulations and all, to begin to deploy naloxone that can be sprayed into the nose, so there's no needles or anything, or Narcan, with police officers in high-risk areas, such that if they come upon someone suspected of a narcotic overdose, that can be initiated, treatment can be initiated, as at the same time EMS is being summoned to the scene and advanced life support coming in. So just as a issue or point of information for the EMCC. Also, in last April, I believe it was, the Chief Brugman from the Anaheim Fire Department presented to EMCC a proposed pilot to pair up a nurse practitioner and a paramedic for deployment in Anaheim for certain types of cases that may be potentially treated in the field without transport or evaluated in the field. That proposal has gone through all the different reviews, and the program has been approved, and it is pending the initial implementation of the what's called a critical care or community care response unit, CCRU. Is that right, Vicki? Anyway, for the committee's information also, the Anaheim proposal has been approved. It has been again reviewed by the state, looked at by Dr. Backer, and that pilot's due to be implemented. I'm not sure that the Ebola issue, the Ebola virus issue, is as big an issue this week as it was the past month, but we continue to be vigilant with being prepared for a potential Ebola victim that may present in Orange County. EMS and Health Disaster Management is working in concert with our healthcare agency, public health and epidemiology, environmental health, as well as fire departments and hospitals, in assuring that we have a consistent and coordinated response should we have an unfortunate situation with an Ebola case presenting. We do. In Orange County, we do get reports from TSA and Homeland Security of any travelers that are coming into the county. We have had, in late November, we had two travelers that came into the county, one from Sierra Leone and one from Guinea. And they were, one was a healthcare worker, I'm sorry, one was a social worker, and one worked in the faith-based, with a faith-based organization. Both of those travelers have now passed their 21-day mark where they are not considered a threat, or it is not considered a threat to them that they may have Ebola within an incubation period. So at the present time, we have no active cases in Orange County that are being monitored, tracked, or followed. Further, the screening that's being done at the federal level appears, from national perspectives, local and state perspectives, to be very effective in identifying those cases that are at risk. So we feel pretty comfortable right now that the risk of a Ebola patient, particularly an unknown one in Orange County, would be extremely minimal. And with that, I think that completes the medical director report. I can answer any questions that the members of the EMCC may have.
Dr. Stratton? Out of curiosity, with there was a lot more travel in the month of November with the holiday. Has there been any intel that there may be more activity given the Christmas holiday that's approaching, and what might represent concern or otherwise?
There hasn't been a we have not received any alerts that there's an increased potential for travel during the Christmas holidays.
Thank you.
Yeah, Dr. Stratton, number one, the for the naloxone, do we is that financial, the PD, are they going to assume the financial responsibility, or is it a county, or how's that paid for?
Yeah, good question. So we the PD, each police department and the sheriff will assume responsibility for the cost responsibility. The county EMS and county will provide the education and oversight.
And as far as the Ebola, we had a couple scares, incidents in the county, and I just want to report out that I believe one was in Orange, one was in Garden Grove, and they went very well. The coordination between all entities and came to, you know, obviously it was not an Ebola, but the system we have in place now in the county seems to be working very well in regards to the Ebola incidents or Ebola scares. Incident command system, public-private partnerships, everything working with the county. So it was really good to see that happen on those two incidents.
Dr. Stratton, I have a question. Regarding the Narcan, I'm very supportive of that endeavor and the pilot for law enforcement. However, I am the chairman of education and training, and I have some growing concerns regarding the EMT scope of practice and how it's becoming outdated currently to the Title 22 regulations. If we are going to train our law enforcement to be able to use Narcan, and they're not doing a direct entry into OC Meds using a patient care report, but our EMTs in Orange County will all be required to be electronic by June 1st, 2015 for all of our providers. Are we considering to expand the utilization of that Narcan pilot to the EMTs, or even considering to expand the EMT scope of practice in Orange County for the utilization of the Narcan?
The short answer is yes.
Thank you.
And now we move on to EMCC correspondence.
Program OC Meds. Let me go ahead, and I'm going to ask Mike DeLobby and Laurent to give that report to us. Sorry, I threw you off on that.
Are you going to go first, Mike?
Yeah, I'll cover first. So in your agenda packet, you'll see attachment number 2 is Orange County EMS hospital reversion data for period January 1st, 2014 to November 30th, 2014. The first 3 pages are hospitals broken down into 5 different areas, and that is hospital-specific ED diversion. Page 4 is trauma and CVRC diversion statistics, and page 5 is internal disruption and CT diversion. So it's here for review.
Well done. In regard to OC Meds, I just have a few updates. For those in the room who may not be aware, OC Meds is the countywide electronic pre-hospital care reporting system. And this month, it's going to be celebrating its first birthday. This month last year, the 911 EMS system in Orange County had successfully transitioned from a paper-based system to an electronic pre-hospital care reporting system, or EPCR, with data collection by paramedics at the patient bedside with 98% participation by 911 ALS providers. As of today, over 180,000 records have been posted to the 911 to the system by 911 ALS providers, and over 7,000 active user accounts, including personnel from fire departments, ambulance companies, and hospitals, are in the system. This year, we have successfully implemented an electronic-based hospital report, or EBHR, system to complement the EPCR, in which mobile intensive care nurses, or MICNs, at base hospitals document their treatment and destination decisions in real time during radio contact. The EBHR has been launched at 5 of the 6 base hospitals, and we expect final implementation early next year. The EBHR is, we're proud of it. It's the first of its kind in California and is developing into a model for the rest of the state. Next year, we will be moving OC Meds into the future and beyond, and are planning to begin implementation of a new modern software platform based on the latest federal healthcare information standards like NEMSIS 3, Health Level 7, and ICD-10. This new platform will allow us to transition our system to modern computing environments used on mobile tablets like Apple iPads and Google Android devices, but will most importantly enable EMS to exchange data with hospitals through existing local health information exchange networks. Very exciting news. OCMS has also been awarded grant funds from the Federal Block Grant Program and the Public Health Emergency Preparedness Grant Program. These funding opportunities will assist us in our efforts to help lay the foundation for continuing operations for OC Meds well into the future. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Well, you're talking about, the first birthday is sort of your baby, so, just thank you for all your hard work on that. I know you've done a lot, and, peaks and valleys, so awesome job. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Continuing with the OC EMS report, there's Orange County EMS has not received any correspondence is directed to the EMCC. In your packets also are summaries and abstracted information from our minutes for 2013-2014, August to August. I guess it's August to July. That report is sent to the EMS authority so that they have an idea of what we've been doing as a EMCC. So that's in your packet to refer to, and for any questions I could answer those as we go along today. Moving down then to the advisory subcommittees, the Facilities Advisory Committee and the County Paramedic Advisory Committee did not have meetings since our past meeting. On October 22nd, the Transportation Committee met. We had about a 2 to 3 hour session where we reviewed step by step and detail by detail the Ebola response plan, and we've already discussed that. It's, in fact, as Chief Kanabe stated, we've actually had 2 field tests of the plan. Neither case turned out to be an Ebola case, but We were able to apply the plan with success twice thus far. Education and training, I should let Mr. Powers give that report since he's the chair of that committee.
Thank you, Dr. Stratton. The Education and Training Committee continues to try to identify opportunities for the agency to properly deploy a standardized accreditation curriculum for EMTs. We've been attempting to revise the curriculum in regards to what exactly Orange County would like the EMTs to understand is their scope of practice and their opportunity here in the county. And looking for an opportunity right now, hopefully in partnership possibly with some of the constituents in the community, to develop a web-based training module that is verifiable through CBEMS, in which the training can be provided to the community in a single single instruction module, so it's consistently deployed in the county, and really try to take off of the plate for the county as well as the providers, the need for them to develop their own individual training programs. Standardization and consistency has been our problem here in the county from the educational perspective, and so this endeavor is to try to standardize the deployment of a training. We have yet to come to a conclusion on it, and hopefully at the next EMCC meeting we'll be able to report further on it. Thank you.
Sorry. Unfinished business, yeah. Which will be mine too.
Next, we're going to go to unfinished business with the Orange County ambulance ordinance. Dr. Stratton?
Yeah, and I should backtrack and apologize. Tammy McConnell, who would be giving some of this report, is currently in our Department Operations Center coordinating the attempts to mandatorily evacuate Silverado Canyon at this time. So if anybody knows Silverado Canyon, you understand what I just said. If you don't, we're there are Silverado Canyon's under mandatory evacuation orders at this time, and our County Emergency Operations Center and the Department Operations Center for EMS is currently active. Under unfinished business, the Orange County Ambulance Ordinance is scheduled for a first reading by the Board of Supervisors next Tuesday, December 16th. Along with the ordinance is also the annual ambulance rate adjustment. So those will both be heard on December 16th, Tuesday of this coming week. And both the ordinance and other supporting material, including the annual rate adjustment, are available on the Board of Supervisors website if you are interested in reading those or reviewing those. After the first reading by the Board of Supervisors, it's likely, I'm not exactly sure of the process, but it's likely then that there would be another public comment period on the ordinance itself with a final then decision by the Board of Supervisors. Also under an unfinished business, the ambulance request for proposal, the RFP process. I think most of those that are involved with this are aware that this past Tuesday, the Board of Supervisors decided to reinstate the current RFP and rescore the proposals that had been received under that current RFP with new selection committee groups. There had been a the original RFP had been withdrawn by the healthcare agency because of concerns about variation in scoring the first time around, and the Board of Supervisors, rather than issue a new RFP, reviewed all the information available and felt that the original RFP, which has been reviewed and approved by the state EMS authority, was sound, and that primarily a process of scoring and selection was an issue that needed to be repeated. And I'll ask if there's any questions about that with the EMCC.
I just have one comment, Dr. Stratton, regarding the first item you touched on, which is the ordinance. Myself, as well as a number of constituents, worked put quite a few hours into working with the agency to revise the ordinance. One of the things I've identified as possibly problematic is tying the ordinance together with the ALS rate approval when we send the ASR to the board, because if one gets denied by the board, is disfavorable, then they both end up dying on the vine. I understand that it's already agendized for this next coming meeting, so it's too late to probably separate them as far as an ASR is concerned, but I would make a recommendation that if this time around the ordinance doesn't survive through its first hearing, that the agency consider separating those two items on ASRs so that they can be dealt with individually by the Board of Supervisors.
Thank you. Other comments or questions? Okay. With Chief Kanabe's permission, I'll go ahead and move to new business. And again, I apologize for being the one dominating this. My some staff are tied up with the current evacuations. Under new business, the Children's Hospital of Orange County has been given preliminary approval by Orange County EMS to come up as a pediatric trauma center. They are currently developing they're in the final steps, essentially, of developing a call panel. The call panel is all the specialty physicians and all that need to be available for a trauma center. The plan is that CHOC will come up probably before our next meeting as a level two pediatric trauma center, meaning that they can take any trauma cases in the county appropriate for a pediatric trauma center, and that is a trauma victim that's age 14 and under. A large concern within the county among many different providers and stakeholders is how will pediatric patients be moved through the county or triaged, if you will, with CHOC as a specialty pediatric trauma center. Through the summer, we have been doing research on different types of triage plans. We've worked closely with trauma operations. That's the trauma surgeons and their trauma coordinators that work with us at EMS in a formal committee structure. We've worked with them. And also had a intern from UCLA's Public Health School helping us evaluate the different ways that, or different permutations, if you will, for triage. Before the next meeting, I'll have finished and completed a prepared white paper that will be distributed to all the EMCC committee members and also posted on our website. It'll be announced through our eGov site. And in that white paper, there's detailed discussions, heat maps, and analysis of pediatric trauma in Orange County. At the present time, the plan is when CHOC does come up as a level two pediatric trauma center, the plan is rather to effectively avoid shocking a complex system like trauma, is to continue to triage pediatric trauma victims to the nearest facility, be it one of the three adult centers or CHOC itself. So we would have a fourth, if you will, center that can take pediatric trauma. But currently, all our adult trauma centers are designated as pediatric receiving centers also. So pediatric cases will still be moved to the closest pediatric center. In looking at the distribution of pediatric patients in the county, and I'm sure everyone's aware that CHOC and UCI, John's aware that you can, if you're on the top floor of either of the two hospitals, you can see the other one. Anyway, CHOC and UCI are quite close. So there may be concern that do we split the cases some way or other, say, you know, if they're on Main Street in Orange on one side or the other, they go this way or that. That's, in fact, is done in Los Angeles. We do not believe that's necessary because in looking at the distribution of pediatric trauma in the county, it appears that UCI would cover a large area of the northern part of the county, Huntington Beach all the way up into the Fullerton area, and CHOC, because of traffic patterns and transportation corridors, would be the nearest receiving based on time of transport for Yorba Linda, Placentia, and that area, funneling down the 55 and the 57 itself, with WestMed and Mission then picking up two other regions that are natural in the county. So the plan initially is, if before our next meeting CHOC comes up, will be that pediatric triage, trauma pediatric triage, that's children 14 and under with trauma, would be routed to the nearest receiving facility. And excuse me, during a period of time, I believe probably a year, before we can get enough data, enough cases to make significant decisions, we will be monitoring and determining whether there needs to be adjustments that would be brought before this committee and trauma ops and others. So I'll stop there and see if there are any questions or comments.
Sam?
Just out of curiosity, so if the pediatric patient goes to the nearest adult trauma center, will that create a need for an IFT with some of the patients, or are the adult trauma centers fully capable? In other words, would there need to be a transfer to CHOC of some subset of those pediatric traumas?
Yeah, Ron, good question. So our current system, a child, in many of the pediatric cases are children. I need to drop back a little bit and say one thing. Pediatric trauma, interestingly, if you look at pediatric trauma systems and how they perform, if you have a well-developed pediatric trauma system, there's actually less surgery than in a system that's not designed for pediatrics. So one of the things that a pediatric trauma system accomplishes is that surgery is only done when a experienced pediatric trauma surgeon feels that it will benefit the child. So exploratory laparotomies and all types of things done in adults are not done in pediatrics. So it takes a different type of expertise. In our current system right now, with CHOC as it is a tertiary referral center, and it also has come up as an emergency department, is that many children are monitored and observed and watched in the adult trauma centers, and particularly, let's say, if they have a low-grade injury of the spleen or something like that that can be watched rather than operated on. Many children, though, that have complicated problems, one would be post-traumatic shock lung, where there's extreme problems with the lung. Those are, by all three adult trauma centers, moved to CHOC as quick as possible, because that's where the expertise is in that area and the technology to handle those types of cases. So CHOC already is a primary tertiary center for pediatric trauma from the three adult centers. It's already an integrated system in a sense, because they're stabilized and moved to CHOC in many situations. The thing also that's occurring is CHOC has become very much a regional center, as has UCI. So we expect that as a trauma center, CHOC will be covering pediatric cases that are transferred in from Riverside, Los Angeles, and now even northern San Diego County. But CHOC currently has many cases coming from the Riverside area. In UCI, we've just run some data on UCI. More than, I think it's 12 to 14% of their cases come from LA County, the Pomona area, and then west of Corona in Riverside. So both our centers are becoming regional, major regional centers for the beyond the communities beyond Orange County. So the short answer to your question is, yeah, the adult centers will stabilize them and move them to CHOC, which is pretty much already developed. CHOC's coming up as an additional resource.
Okay, in just a quick follow-up. In northwestern Orange County, where the primary adult trauma center is Memorial, will those PEDS then enter the LA County pediatric trauma system if the nearest receiving center is Memorial?
So, correct. So, good question. So, No, because the answer is they would still route. So there's a corridor. It's like around the 405, the Los Alamitos area, and northwestern Huntington Beach. So where Ron and I live in Huntington Beach, so we know the area. Seal Beach, where it's much more effective, it's particularly at times of day, to move to Long Beach Memorial. And Long Beach Memorial has associated with it Miller Children's that can handle the pediatric cases. In fact, Miller Children's is, along with Children's of LA, Harbor, UCLA, and USC, is one of their primary pediatric centers also. It brings up an interesting thing that I'm not sure everybody knows, but just to throw it out there, Long Beach Memorial is essentially recognized as a trauma resource for Orange County, and UCI is recognized as a trauma resource for LA County. We rely on LA County, and LA County relies on us for verification of LA for Long Beach and Orange for UCI. But LA and Orange County both use the American College of Surgeons for verification. So even though we don't necessarily go up and inspect Long Beach Memorial, they're considered one of our trauma centers and UCI one of LA's because with a interagency or inter-county agreement. And in fact, Long Beach Memorial submits their data to our system. That's correct, right, Laurent?
Yes.
Yeah.
Dr. Stratton? I believe Orange County will be made better by having CHOC Children's take on this endeavor, and I think it'll really raise their capacity and their capability, as you pointed out, the need to have a really strong regional presence by a children's hospital. So we applaud it down in South County. But I do have a question. If you could set some context for those on the panel as well as those in the audience, just in rounded numbers, if you were to view, what's the total approximate annual number of traumas, and what percentage of those would be 14 or younger?
So the total number runs probably, I would estimate 750 total annual pediatric patients that meet trauma criteria. The important thing, though, is that there are what we call hot spots in Orange County with regard to pediatric trauma, and right now we're sitting right in the middle of a major hot spot. Santa Ana has a much higher per capita pediatric trauma than, say, Fullerton or other areas of the county. That's not to say there's not pediatric trauma spread out throughout the county, but the primary load, if you will, of pediatric trauma also is in the Central County area. The one thing also, just to backtrack a minute, Noel, is one thing with pediatrics that we try to do is not separate a child very far from their parents, in particular, or their caregivers. So if we have a child in San Clemente who is, let's say, a bicycle versus an auto, even though it may make some logic to fly that child up to Central Orange County, it could be better for the outcome of the child because of the family support to move them to Mission. So the other thing that we're measuring all the time and weighing is what's the potential for separating a child from their emotional and psychological support of their family. So we do not want to make a decision that would affect that aspect of trauma care, which is real important. Children are, obviously, I think all of us would realize they're quite sensitive. They're separated too much from their mother in particular in that setting.
Thank you. I know in certain instances, pediatrics could be defined as 17 or younger. In this case, for trauma, it looks like we landed on 14. Could you help unpack the decision? How do you land on that age, if you would?
14 and under is the accepted definition of the pediatric age group by the American College of Surgeons, who essentially set the American College of Surgeons Committee on Trauma set the national standards for trauma in the United States. And it's kind of interesting because their current CEO is Dr. Hoyt, who was chair of surgery at UCI for about 5 years. So we have plenty of influence there. Anyway, they set the standards, and those standards are then reviewed, because they're a professional organization, then they get secondarily reviewed by the Centers for Disease Control. So that 14 and under is a national standard. That's not to mean that a 16-year-old may not be more appropriate to go to a pediatric-capable hospital than not, but to adopt the national standards, we're at 14.
Thank you. Very helpful.
Sam, can I just make a comment?
Yeah, I was waiting. I was hoping you'd and feel free to correct anything I said.
No. For those of you who don't know, I'm the director of pediatric intensive care at Chalk Children, so I've been quite involved with the whole process. I think just to emphasize that we've not been operating in silos to present. We've been working closely with all the trauma centers at Chalk for many years now, so I think the communication is wide open, and will be enhanced now with the development of trauma at Chalk Children's. But I think that we will continue to provide critical care services at the other trauma centers as needed when children arrive there. But hopefully this will allow for transfer of children that are going to require any prolonged care to Chalk, so that they can have access to the services that the wide range of services that Chalk provides. But I think we all support the idea that this is not going to turn over in one day, that it will continue to be sort of in regions close to the hospitals that make sense, so that we can make a transition to whatever eventually occurs. And that's largely true for the South County. So I think because Chalk has a presence at Mission VA already, it makes that the population there, it makes a lot of sense to keep the kids there. And I think they'll provide, have access to a lot of the services that Chalk will be able to provide. And as you point out, the need for surgical intervention is pretty unusual in kids, except for neurosurgical. And the neurosurgeons that are based at Chalk Children's have been providing services for all the trauma centers throughout the county, and that will continue to be the case. So, we're just waiting to kind of get the call panel completed, and I think we're shooting for January 15th. So we should be at our next meeting here discussing that we're open for business, so to speak. We appreciate the support from the county and from this committee in particular, and look forward to contributing meaningfully to this aspect of care for kids. And I'm open for any questions.
Great, thanks, Nick.
Okay, Sam. Yep.
Okay. Continuing under the. Some of the new business suite.
Actually, Dr. Stratton, if I may, I just have one question for you regarding Chalk. Chalk came up recently, I think within a year, as a approved emergency department. And I believe last I've heard in the report that their ER is doing, greater than expected in regards to the volume per day. Has there been any decrease in the remaining facilities in the county in regards to their intake of pediatric children into their ERs? or have you heard of any decrease based on chalk coming up?
If I can give a short answer and then also add some detail, we have not specifically asked for data on decreasing pediatric presentations to emergency departments other than chalk. So we have not received any information that implies that, but again, I don't have any data to answer that specifically. When chalk came up as a emergency department, a pediatric emergency department, about a year ago, the expectation was, and it was hoped, that they would have about somewhere between 50 and 64 patients a day presenting to the emergency department so that it could remain financially viable and not draw resources from the rest of the hospital, which I think all of us realize is a important tertiary center for the county. So there was a lot of concern about whether there were enough pediatric patients to keep chalk as a viable emergency department. I think everyone's surprise, the volume now 1 year later is about 200 patients a day, which indicates that there's likely to be a good demand for also trauma. And again, it's centering somewhat on the regional recognition of chalk outside of Orange County as a preferred site for children. The other thing, I don't know if many people know that chalk is a center for children with disabilities. And one thing we know, for example, in Orange County, we have more children that are identified with congenital cardiac problems and issues like that. All of those preferentially are moved to chalk. Chalk also is a major center looking at pulmonary diseases in children, as well as genetic diseases. So chalk attracts a large number of children with disabilities as their, and those are that chalk is their primary provider. And that extends actually into the early 20s, where chalk will follow an individual who may be 20, but that chalk's followed for many years, and that's because they have a rare genetic disorder.
Yeah, I would just add, Sam, the number of children that are surviving to become adults now with pediatric diseases is increasing in several areas: cancer, pulmonary diseases, specifically cystic fibrosis, congenital heart disease, as you mentioned. There are more people with congenital heart disease that are adults than there are children now because they've survived. And it actually, for emergency departments, is a real challenge because these children that have had congenital heart surgery arrive with very complicated, having had complicated surgery, to emergency departments that aren't used to dealing with that, and have lesions that do not leave them completely normal. So they'll have, for example, oxygen saturation values that are what were considered life-threatening in a lot of circumstances, are very much normal for children with cyanotic congenital lesions. So this really poses a challenge and an opportunity for emergency departments that don't primarily take care of children to learn about pediatric diseases that come to them emergently. And so chalk obviously wants to continue to care for those children and be a resource. But there's a limit in terms of the age. Right now, as a rule, we go to 21 years of age. There are children's hospitals in the country that are going beyond that, but you start to get into other adult problems that the staff aren't comfortable taking care of. So there's a real need and opportunity for this sort of, adolescents and young adults with pediatric diseases to really develop programs, and there's a lot of opportunity for research as well.
Thank you both, Dr. Stratton and Dr. Annis. You know, I want to definitely also commend Dr. Stratton for initiating the Pediatric Trauma Center and CHOC for bringing it to our community. I think it's a great valued asset, and I attempt to make the analogy of CHOC coming up as an ER, because I think that what we'll see in the end is when CHOC comes up as a trauma center, it will be a benefit to everyone. I'm cognizant of the politics of the situation, and when there is a new provider of any sort of service in our community, there seems to be a worry of loss of opportunity. But I think that CHOC coming up as not only an emergency department but as a trauma center for our community is a fantastic thing for our community that is going a little bit under-recognized in not only in our media but within our system. So I wanted to take the moment to just say thank you both, and I strongly support it.
Thanks on that. So still under the CHOC item on new business. So for the, it's not an action item, it's how we intend to implement pediatric triage. We'll continue triaging to the nearest either adult or CHOC trauma center and monitor that equipment through our OC Med system that Laurent described. Just one other point, CHOC and Orange County EMS and the school systems in Orange County all also integrate efforts like to place automatic external defibrillators and all. I haven't had the time to be that active, but Dr. Miller and I both, and Ken's been going to most of the meetings, meet with the school superintendent along with CHOC representatives and fire department representatives on a quarterly basis to coordinate all our activities with regard to pediatrics. And again, this is kind of then becomes a focus on adolescents between school, medical providers, and the public health arms of the county. Moving on the item B is a stroke neurology receiving center report. Next week, in conjunction with UCLA, a epidemiologist researcher, we have been compiling our stroke performance data and outcome data in Orange County. And that will also go up as a white paper before our next meeting. To keep things within our time frame this morning, our performance in Orange County with regard to stroke care is in the top, it's meeting the top 90% of performance criteria that are established, if you will, in the literature throughout the United States. We have a system that is envied by many. It's partly because of the dynamics and the demographics in Orange County, as well as the support of many people in helping develop and keep the system going. Just to announce to EMCC, Orange County's trauma system has is now included in what's called a research consortium that has just been approved by the National Institutes of Health to do future research on projects that need large numbers of subjects in stroke centers. In that project, what will happen is as new stroke therapies and new ideas about management of stroke come along, the National Institutes of Health will refer those questions to the consortium, which includes Orange County, the USC and UCLA in Los Angeles, and UC San Diego. So we have this have a consortium and an opportunity to do research for many years to come, based mostly on the fact that we have such a well-functioning trauma system, or I'm sorry, stroke system at this time. Moving on, the IFT ALS update. We currently continue to have interest in the interfacility transport using paramedics that are employed by private providers. The current time we have three private providers that are providing IFT ALS service in the county. It is Lynch Ambulance, who is the original Liberty Ambulance, and coming on board are Premier Ambulance and AmeriCare Ambulance. So we actually have four. AmeriCare is just coming up as it is. So the program is appears to be viable and continuing to provide service. This program is monitored very tightly, again, through our OC Med system. And the performance measures that I've reported multiple times to this meeting continue to be met. Any questions on IFT ALS or stroke that I could answer?
I have one question on the IFT ALS. What kind of volume are you observing taking place in the county?
The volume last year, so this was primarily with one provider, was just over, I believe, 2,400. Is that right, Vicki?
I haven't looked at
the data. Yeah, it's about 2,400. So the first year of cases that that required a paramedic or ALS transport.
Mm-hmm.
With the introduction we have a couple of other models that are coming in. I don't want to ramble too much, but this is important, I think, for this group to know. With the advent of accountable care organizations, which are being, I wouldn't say mandated, but it's the result of the Affordable Care Act, our development of universal health care. With the development of accountable care organizations, the volume actually is moving up month by month as those who are subscribing to certain insurance groups that have a number of different hospitals with them are repatriated with their insurer, I guess is the way to say it, with their accountable care organization. So what has happened is we recently brought on Liberty Ambulance, who provides interfacility transport for the Kaiser organization, and are with that moving Kaiser patients who represent a huge chunk of Orange County insurance subscribers. With that, we've seen a large jump in our volume. So I suspect it'll be over 5,000 after in this second year. Probably 6,000, which is not very, you know, that's still a very small number compared to 160,000 911 calls that that we handle each year. But this is a very specialized niche area, you know. It has solved quite a bit of our problems with prolonged interfacility transports while the sending facility is waiting for transport to move to a higher level of care. That seems to be much less a problem, particularly for neurosurgical cases.
That's wonderful.
Okay, we come into the item where we're going to have appointment of a nomination committee. I think traditionally what we've done is we've asked for three volunteers for the nomination committee. Are there any interest in being on that committee? Well,
I'll be
okay.
Back.
We got one there.
Okay.
I mean, I can do it. I don't know if I'm allowed to do it as a vice chair.
Yeah, you are.
Okay, I'll volunteer.
Because you're already, your life's already laid out as vice chair.
So I'll be another one if there's a third.
I'll volunteer, but I'm going to be on vacation starting on the 19th. So is something you're going to do in January? Or?
Well, I think according to this, we have to have something to the EMCC by the 15th of December. So we're
December, so I guess not. Okay.
So we'll have a call here within the next couple of days so we can get it. Is that correct?
No, does it?
Sounds like the next couple hours.
I think we have to have it done by...
Yeah.
Should we stay after?
We had to do it by the end of January of last...
It's the end of January.
15th is Monday.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. Said here, honor before December 15th, but January?
Yeah, we can do it in January.
Okay.
Because that's what we did the last time, is the nominating committee met, and then we did a vote between January, during January for February.
Great.
And by bylaws or tradition, I'd have to double-check bylaws, that I will contact the three of you to set up a... we usually do it by a phone conference.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. The only thing also, Eileen, we need to check is make sure that's not a Brown Act issue for three of us to meet.
Yeah, probably not.
For a committee, I mean, probably not.
Nominating subcommittee, but we need to check with county council to make sure that that can be done.
So, Dr. Sharon, we'll wait for your direction then, contact...
Correct. I'll contact you and...
Perfect.
I'll set that up.
Next item is a psychiatric emergency services initiative.
And Julie's going to present that. And I think Chief Hennessy's also here, will talk, was going to speak, a former member of EMCC. So some of you who get to see Chief Hennessy again here in a minute.
Good morning again. Julie Puentes, representing the Hospital Association of Southern California, and others who are part of what has turned into a very exciting coalition to work with the county to develop a new model of care for responding to patients in psychiatric crisis. So what I'd like to do is talk with you today about how that coalition evolved and where we'd like to go, and hopefully this sounds good to this committee, and at some point, I know this is not an action item today, but at some point it would be great to have the committee's support. So let me make sure I know how to move this. I mean, it's gonna help me here. There we go. Okay, so on this slide, you can see the coalition that has come together to work on this issue. We started coming together about a year ago when we had an opportunity to work with the county to submit two state grants. One of the grants dealing with personnel in hospitals to triage patients in psychiatric crisis was funded, and on a separate track, we are working with the county now to implement that grant. The second grant, which dealt with a psychiatric emergency services or PES facility that we were trying to establish here in the county, was not funded, and this coalition is continuing its work to see what will be entailed to actually establish a PES here in the county without that grant funding. The problems that we're trying to solve are that we have many, many patients showing up in our hospital emergency departments, many of whom, in fact, most of whom are brought to us by the law enforcement community, who are experiencing psychiatric crises, and we're not able to triage those patients quickly enough, and we're not able to get them into treatment quickly enough. And so they're spending hours and days in hospital emergency departments without getting the services and treatment that they need. That's an inappropriate care setting for the patient. It can become kind of chaotic in that environment. It's also a drain on law enforcement resources because in many cases the officers are required to stay with the patient for a given period of time until there can be a safe handoff. And ultimately, what we have is emergency room capacity diminished for everybody because we have patients sitting in emergency rooms who really shouldn't be there. They're not getting into treatment, and it's taking resources and requiring extra personnel, security personnel to make sure that the patient stays safe and to make sure that the hospital personnel are not injured, as well as making sure that the patient does not leave on their own when it's not safe for them to do so. When the coalition first came together, it was the hospitals exclusively working with the county on those SB 82 grant proposals. And these are the objectives that were identified and agreed to between the hospital community and the county staff. We wanted to expedite the crisis intervention and treatment. As I've mentioned, we wanted to reduce the need for involuntary inpatient treatment, which is very expensive and obviously confining. And we wanted to have the same goals for children and youth as well as adults. So we started looking around at different models that were in place around the state, and both San Diego and Los Angeles County have the model that I'm talking about today, this PES model, in various forms, but kind of the star model, if you will, is up in Alameda County, which has operated the PES very successfully. And in that community, they're able to stabilize about 70% of the patients and get them out within 23 hours back into the community for services without inpatient treatment. And the benefits that accrue to the system that I mentioned before in the context of problems, you know, we now see benefits in those areas. Law enforcement is freed up more quickly, patients in treatment more quickly, inpatient hospitalization is avoided. The patient is not languishing in a chaotic emergency room environment. So the county behavioral health staff indicated that they could convert ETS to the PES model of care. And what we're hoping is that that can be done very quickly. There had initially been some discussion of having that done during the current fiscal year. That may slop over into 15-16, but we are advocating very ardently for that to be done just as soon as possible. And some of you may know I was at the Board of Supervisors earlier this week encouraging the board to support whatever financial support is necessary to make sure that that happens. One of the other critical features of the PES and what needs to happen for system improvement is post-discharge services to the patient. Once a patient is discharged from the PES, you want to make sure that they're accessing those community services and continuing to receive the help that they need. And then lastly, a data tracking system. San Diego County has a great data tracking system for 5150 patients, and hospitals and the county staff get together on a monthly basis to look at that data, and it's used for continuous improvement in their system and making sure that the patients are getting the treatment that they need in a timely way. We'd like to have something like that here as well. So next steps, we've started meeting with the Board of Supervisors. I'm here today. We're continuing our community awareness efforts. We have been talking with Dr. Stratton about whether any policy changes would be needed on the EMS side, and we've talked about the criteria that the PES would need to meet in order for this department to feel comfortable with moving to that model of care. And then the community, specifically the coalition that I mentioned a moment ago, is going to be getting together early in the year to commence discussions in earnest, which will build on the work that we've already done to identify the benefits of a PES, the staffing that would be required, the funding that would be required, and we'll be returning to the healthcare agency and to the Board of Supervisors with a plan late March, early April, about how this could be done, what the responsibilities of the county would continue to be, what the private sector feels that it may be able to do to support the county in this endeavor, and hopefully we can all reach agreement that this is an important way to go, and we can address the rest of the issues, and hopefully the ETS conversion will be well on its way by then. So we will have taken an important first step. But that's the plan going forward. And again, we would really appreciate your support, and I'd certainly be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you. Julie, great work as always. As you know, mental health for children is, care for mental health for children is woefully inadequate in Orange County. I would, I know Chalk has recently taken, you know, starting to take this on seriously, really wants to develop a system for children. So I would just urge the coalition to contact me and I'll direct them to the right people to discuss that.
Yeah, you bet. And in fact, I've had numerous conversations with Heather Husty and others involved in that effort. And while I mentioned just briefly that the objectives are the same on the children's side, the solution is probably going to look different because there are some who feel that the PES model of care itself may not be applicable to children, but we do need to figure out what a good model of care will be. And it's the intention of everybody in the coalition that once the discussions on the children's side move along further, that we will all be supporting those solutions.
Excellent.
So thank you for mentioning
that.
I don't know if this question is for you, and good work, by the way, is for you or Sam. I have some interest in the field triage decision point, it seems, and the training load that might become associated with preparing, I presume some of this model moves patients from a field contact directly to one of the more appropriate facilities rather than funnel them through the ER. And I'm just curious about that training piece.
The initial aim on the project will be to move patients that are under a 5150 to a psychiatric emergency services area. And one of the criteria that the Alameda model, which is the one we're aspiring to, maintains is that there be a physician on site that can do an assessment of that patient. So there wouldn't be field medical clearance, if you will, differentiation of psych versus a, let's say, you know, an abnormal seizure or something like that presenting like a psych disorder. It's more moving someone with a, on the surface, apparent psychiatric disorder or behavioral abnormality to a center that's focused on psych but can still do medical screening. So the answer to the question is that it's likely not going to be anything more than, for EMS, the field side, likely not going to be anything more than making everyone aware that the resource is there, reemphasizing the necessity of properly handling psychiatric patients and integrating then better EMS with law enforcement who places the 5150s to move the patients to these centers. I have to say our psych, and this came up with the Board of Supervisors, I think Supervisor Nelson said it best, or Supervisor Morlock, both of them were right on the money. This is our current system is kind of a disgrace. So we've got to do this. This really needs our support. And
So these patients will only be those who meet the threshold for a 5150 commitment by law enforcement then? It's not for the sort of those that bump along below that level?
The way, and of course we still have to work, the coalition needs to work with it, but the main focus to start with would be those that are 5150. But then I think the program would quickly move into those with, for example, someone with a known psychiatric disorder that it, you know, that can be established in the field, 5150 or not, and it appears to be a recurrence of their disorder, could be moved to these sites. It'll have incredible scrutiny as we start it because of the risk of missing a medical problem or assuming that a psychiatric problem has no medical component to it. We'll have to scrutinize it very tightly.
Thanks. I know that's always a frustrating occurrence for first responders where it doesn't meet the law enforcement threshold, but you still know there's something wrong there and that somebody needs help. So it's great to see this moving.
I just wanted to acknowledge that we also do have two police chiefs with us today, and I don't know if there's anything they might like to add. But
Paul Hennessy and Brian Jacobs.
Good morning, Dr. Stratton, members of the committee. It's good to be back here again. I wanted to speak on behalf of the PES concept. For us in law enforcement, this is a critical issue. We spend a great deal of time and effort in terms of trying to manage these cases without having the resources to be able to assist us. Simply put, within the law, there are two categories of individuals who can commit a person under an involuntary mental health commitment, and that's the mental health clinicians and police officers. Many times we're sent out to scenes, and of course this has become more commonplace since we've seen the tragedies that have occurred from Sandy Hook to Aurora, Colorado, etc. People are much more likely to call on individuals who indicate a threat to themselves or others. And of course, that's what 5150 is all about. So those calls come to law enforcement. We respond out to the scene. We'll be in contact with the individuals. We've done considerable amount of training here in the county for all of our police officers in assessing mental health issues. The officers will make an assessment that we do have a circumstance which requires an involuntary detainment. They'll do so. Our process then is to first contact ETS. That's Emergency Treatment Services Center. However, they only have 10 beds. They do not have the services to be able to assist us. The next step is to contact CAT, which is the Centralized Assessment Team. Generally speaking, they will say, we'll go meet you at your emergency room and we'll do the assessment there. And in many circumstances, that assessment may not necessarily determine that person as a threat where the officer may think that they are. The third step is to go to one of six receiving centers. UCI Medical Center is one. I'm the police chief for UC Irvine. I do have the medical center as part of my jurisdiction. So this is an issue that we're real familiar with at UCIMC. In most circumstances, police officers will, because of the demands on their time, the needs for them to be out, will be responding quickly to an emergency room to try to drop off their patient. But then they result in the delays in terms of being at the emergency room. And we need to expedite this process. We need to get them out of the emergency room and into a care center in which those services can be provided to them that they most need, not to be sitting in the back of a police car, not to be in an interview room, or not to be in an open emergency room in which others can be subjected to this mental health issue or problem that we've brought them in for. So I appreciate your support. I appreciate all the work that Julie has put in terms of moving this forward. All of the police chiefs in the county are behind this effort, and we'll continue to push it forward. Thank you for your time. I wish you all a happy holiday and the best of New Year's.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Chief.
Real quick, I'm going to jump in. My name's Kevin Baker. I'm the police chief of the city of Westminster. I've become involved with Paul and Julie in regard to the PES model. And just wanted to again voice our support, at least from my end of the county. It is a incredible issue. My officers respond to nearly 1,400 calls a year in regards to 5150s. A lot of those are involuntary. And the officers drive around sometimes from hospital to hospital and when ETS is full. Drain on resources, but the biggest thing is, you know, we have the client in the back of our police car that needs those services right away. And, you know, it's definitely a time for a change. So I would ask this committee to please support this model. Law enforcement supports it, as Paul said, that we have nearly every chief in the county looking at something different and something better to enhance the services that we deliver. So thank you for your time.
Yeah, so...
Brian Jacobs.
I want to thank Patrick Powers for informing me about the work of this committee, and also naturally, of course, Julie and the police chiefs who are here today. My name is Brian Jacobs. I'm a member of the Orange County Mental Health Board. I probably term out pretty soon here. I've been an advocate for 25 years, and you're familiar with dealing with people with mental illness if you're in the emergency field. And so I'm preaching to the choir, and my dear wife has worked for many years to try to change that because we have a situation where we have a biological brain disorder and the criteria for treatment happens to be danger. Well, so the criteria makes that population dangerous. And four times as many people with mental illness receive treatment in jail or prison than in a treatment facility. And this is wrong, and we've been fighting for years to change that. We got a nice win with AB 1421, May 15th, when the Board of Supervisors unanimously approved Laura's Law, but it's not a panacea. We need more hospital beds, and we need more support. And I very much appreciate the work of Julie and the police chiefs in helping develop this model. Thank you very much.
We had this item as a presentation item this week, and just by protocol, we'll put it on for our next meeting as an agenda item so that we can support it. And so that's what we'll do, take action. Thank you very much, the speakers, and thank you very much. I'm also on the Commission on Homelessness in the county, and that's a huge issue there. And this is an area that I think we're way underrepresented, and we need to do something about. As also a reserve police officer, so I've been at emergency rooms for 4 hours at a time with a patient like that, and it takes resources. So anyway, any other questions?
Yeah, I think this is kind of in the form of a comment. I'm glad we're having it on the agenda to consider for support at the next meeting. I think all the organizations that have participated in the coalition that are bringing this proposal forward should be commended. My career in healthcare in this county probably goes back 35 years or more, and this has been a perennial issue in terms of how to effectively deal with psychiatric emergencies in this county. What has been presented, the psychiatric emergency service model, really is a best practice approach to this, and in my view, this really does represent the really first opportunity to really make a major change and improvement in a mental health system for psychiatric emergency patients. And I think, you know, it works, it makes things better for law enforcement, for paramedics, transport agencies, hospital emergency rooms, the providers that are involved, it's all better. But what we can't lose sight of, what this really does, is it makes things better for the patients and getting them to definitive care that can really meet their needs on in a more timely basis. Yeah, thank you.
Any other comments?
Go ahead,
sure. I just have a question for Julie, I guess, would be. Having been an emergency nurse for over 30 years, I've seen this population grow and the need grow for mental health care in an emergency situation. Are there any plans to expand ETS in terms of beds?
When ETS converts to the PES model of care, it will be able to handle twice as many patients as it's handling today. The PES model is not bed-based, if you will. It's a different type of physical setting. But the key point in response to your question is that it should be able to double its capacity at any given time. So 22, 23 at a time. And then if there are stabilizing patients, you know, you've got new patients coming in. So even beyond that for that reason.
Thank you.
Okay, our next item will be member comments.
Okay.
Any comments?
I was just going to echo what's been, I think, a theme from the council here, is that I think the work that you're doing is extraordinary, and it's long overdue, and it is sad to think of such an affluent county allowing so many members of our society to be treated in this manner. I think of the dignity of person, and I think we owe ourselves and our community and our neighbors a more thoughtful response. And I think about our emergency care workers and some of the implications to them is our nurses have been attacked, hit, doctors mistreated, and I think this is a win in terms of how we think about the dignity of person, not only on the recipient side, but on the care side as well. And I'm real hopeful that we, as a body, can be part of the momentum demonstrating the importance of this going forward. So, Julie, and to you and your team, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chief. My comments are I want to recognize Dr. Stratton and the Orange County MS office. we have seen some tremendous change in the most recent history of our county, 2013, 2014 included, whether it be our stroke centers, our IFT ALS program, the county taking the lead in regards to conducting the RFP process, looking at new solutions for mental health that we've never considered in the past, and the momentum that we have, a pediatric trauma center and regionalization of trauma services. This system continues to improve, and it's mostly due to the hard work that the agency continues to put forward. And I want to make sure I just recognize that we see how small the agency is, how limited the agency is with its resources, but how our community continues to improve in delivery of emergency health care. The collaboration continues to improve, and I, for one, hope to be a continued part of that community and that collaboration. And I want to thank Dr. Stratton and his office for all their hard work.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Powers. Well said. At this point, any other member comments? No. At this point, we'll open it up to public comment, public forum. Do we have any speakers?
Those were the two.
Okay. Then we our next meeting will be Friday, February 27th, 2015. Right here at 0900 hours. And if there's nothing else, we will go ahead and adjourn. Thank you very much for your attendance.